Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. In this episode, on Thursday, April 23rd, 2026, we'll feature articles that appeared in the Arizona Mirror over the past week. Since this program airs only once a week, some of the articles may be a bit dated, and breaking stories may be added toward the end. The Arizona Mirror is an independent publication which sources stories from all over the state and the nation. We will focus primarily on stories that impact people in Arizona. In this week's episode, these are some of the stories we'll be reading. Katie Hobbs sitting on $7.2 million war chest, outraising both GOP challengers combined, 6-1. Kelly Gallego urged DHS to halt planned ICE detention facilities in Surprise and Marana. Green Party governor candidate, her own party called a sham, survives two ballot challenges. Alma and Consuelo Hernandez beat legal efforts to boot them off legislative ballot. A historically unpopular Trump came to Phoenix to rally the base by bragging about Iran. And let's get started. Starting this episode, Katie Hobbs sitting on $7.2 million war chest, outraising both GOP challengers combined, 6-1, by Jim Small, April 16, 2026. In her bid for a second term, Governor Katie Hobbs is sitting on a campaign war chest that is six times what both of her Republican challengers have combined, and she raised nearly twice as much as Andy Biggs and David Schweiger did in the first 3 months of the year. In the first quarter, the Democratic incumbent hauled in nearly $2.1 million, thanks to a fundraising operation that hews closely to the national fundraising efforts by other prominent Democrats. It is driven by contributions from big law executives, the tech industry, and the entertainment world. Hobbs ended March with almost $7.2 million in the bank. While Katie Hobbs continues to build momentum and connect with Arizonans across the state, her opponents are stuck in a chaotic primary, burning through limited cash and taking out-of-touch positions on the issues that matter most to Arizonans, Nicole DeMont, Hobbs' campaign manager, said in a written statement. Five straight quarters of outraising the entire GOP field makes one thing clear. Katie Hobbs is building a broad coalition of Republicans, Democrats, and independents who are rallying behind her record of delivering results, and that coalition will win in November. By comparison, Biggs and Schweikert raised a combined $1.1 million. Though the financial footing of the two Republican congressmen is starkly different. Biggs, who has been endorsed by President Donald Trump, pulled in about $855,000 for the first quarter and entered April with more than $1.1 million on hand. Schweikert, on the other hand, raised just $219,000 and spent nearly twice that, leaving him with just $86,000 in cash as the campaign speeds toward the July 21 primary election. Arizonans are reacting with excitement and optimism about our vision to restore the American dream, from eliminating the state income tax to fostering an environment that encourages home buying for our next generation of citizens, Biggs said in a written statement. We're staying focused on the issues our state cares about, and we're confident that strategy will be rewarded by the voters in 2026. Hobbs took more than 22,000 contributions between January and March, and the average itemized donation was just $20. State law only requires political donors to be identified after they give a total of $25 to a campaign. Hobbs' total includes nearly $162,000 in unitemized contributions. That small dollar base was bolstered by a collection of wealthy supporters who gave her campaign maximum $5,500 contributions, accounting for about $385,000 of her total. Among those prominent backers are, quote, Grey's Anatomy and, quote, Scandal creator Shonda Rhimes, television writer and producer David Mandel, Metallica manager Peter Mensch, Amazon general counsel David Sapolsky, Shake Shack founder Danny Meyer, and director Adam Nimoy, son of actor Leonard Nimoy. Biggs, meanwhile, has earned the financial support of prominent national conservative megadonors like Shipping Supply CEO Richard Hulane, businessman Douglas Deason, hotel magnate Gary Thorsen, and entrepreneur Jay Kemmerer. And while Schweikert lagged behind in overall fundraising, he has the support of a number of prominent Arizona business figures, including former Phoenix Suns owner Robert Sarver and Swift Transportation founder Jerry Moyes. One wrinkle in Hobbs' reelection bid may be entrepreneur Hugh Little, who bankrolled his campaign as an independent with a $1 million loan and still has more than $800,000 in cash. Little mounted his campaign as a member of the Arizona Independent Party, but will go before voters as a candidate for the No Labels Party after a judge last month ruled that the party illegally changed its name last year. Little is positioning himself as a business-minded independent outside of the partisan political fray, and if he continues to pump money into his campaign, he could siphon votes of right-of-center Arizonans that are crucial to Hobbs winning in a state where Republicans hold a decisive voter registration advantage over Democrats. And with that, we conclude this first story. Katie Hobbs sitting on $7.2 million war chest, outraising both GOP challengers combined 6-1. Next, we turn to immigration and two stories about ICE detention facilities. Kelly Gallego urged DHS to halt planned ICE detention facilities in Surprise and Marana. By Jared McDonald Evoy, April 17, 2026. Arizona U.S. Senators Mark Kelly and Ruben Gallego are urging the Trump administration to put a halt to two planned detention facilities in the state as opposition to them grows and questions continue to mount, according to a letter exclusively obtained by the Arizona Mirror. Given the scale and pace of these efforts and the department's review of detention projects nationwide, we urge the department to stop the planned detention projects in Arizona, including in Surprise and Marana, until there is full transparency and a thorough assessment of the impact these facilities will have on Arizona communities, Kelly and Gallego wrote in a letter they sent on Thursday to the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. The letter is a follow-up to a previous one the two Democrats sent in February to then-DHS Secretary Kristi Noem and U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Acting Director Todd Lyons. Noem has since been replaced by Mark Wayne Mullen. The senators noted in their April 16th letter that they never received a response to the first letter. The two facilities in question have been facing protests from local residents. In Marana, ICE has been planning to reopen a previously shuttered private prison, giving a sole source agreement for the Marana detention facility to Utah-based Management and Training Corporation. MTC purchased the facility for $15 million last summer, and now the facility is set to become a possible holding facility while people await deportation. The contract states it would hold upwards of 513 men and space for around 31 ICE employees. However, ICE's solicitation for the facility described it as a detention center with a capacity for 775 detainees, and previous statements about the facility when it was run by the state said it could house around 500 people. This lack of transparency, coupled with conflicting information across projects, raises serious questions about whether the department has adequately assessed and reviewed these planned facilities and sufficiently defined or fully evaluated their scope and requirements, Gallego and Kelly wrote in their letter to Mullen. The two senators raised similar questions with the proposed facility in Surprise, which has faced considerable pushback. To date, the department has provided little information on how the property was identified, valued, or procured, they wrote. Reporting suggests other acquisitions may have similarly exceeded market value, highlighting the need for thorough oversight. Given the circumstances surrounding these projects, we are concerned about the potential for waste, fraud, and abuse, and whether taxpayers are receiving fair value. The warehouse in Surprise is one of many other similar facilities that have faced considerable pushback, even in Trump country, that the administration is planning to use to implement its mass deportation efforts. And there is a copy of the letter that Gallego and Kelly sent in this article. Gallego and Kelly also raised other issues that have arisen as President Donald Trump tries to fulfill his campaign promise to deport tens of millions of people. While the department is rapidly expanding available detention space, it has failed to provide even basic safety and adequate medical care for individuals at existing facilities, the letter says. As a result, detained individuals are facing serious and, in too many cases, deadly consequences. In 2026, 16 people have already died in ICE custody. The 31 deaths last year is a two-decade high watermark for the agency. In Arizona, detention centers have seen cases of measles as well as overcrowding, witnessed by members of Congress who called it appalling in their own letter to DHS. During your confirmation hearing, you discussed the importance of local community input and committed to engaging transparently and regularly with localities in which the department has plans for new detention facilities, the senators wrote to Mullen. Consistent with this commitment, we urge the department to halt detention expansion efforts in Arizona until it has fully undertaken a robust engagement process, and we request a prompt briefing on the department's plans, authorities, funding, procurement decisions, and operational approach moving forward. DHS did not respond to a request for comment by the time of publication. The two senators have requested a response by May 1. And that concludes, Kelly Gallego urged DHS to halt planned ICE detention facilities in Surprise and Marana. And that same day, the Mirror had an update on the Surprise facility. Surprise ICE detention plan scales back from 1,500 beds to 542. The city will also receive $300,000 a year for lost property taxes after negotiations with Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen. By Tim Henderson, April 17, 2026. Some of the Trump administration's controversial new warehouse immigration detention centers are getting scaled back and postponed as states and cities fight back and new Homeland Security Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen reviews actions taken by his ousted predecessor, Kristi Noem. Some states and cities have seen more communication and compromise as Mullen takes over, and the Department of Homeland Security faces a continued funding shutdown that has reached 60 days. That includes discussions about a proposed Arizona detention center where DHS agreed to scale back the number of prisoners by two-thirds and pay a city for lost taxes, and a proposed center in Maryland with a similar offer from the department. A lawsuit is also holding up work on that detention center. And in Georgia, a small city cut off the water supply to a proposed immigration holding site. A plan to house up to 1,500 immigrants in Surprise, Arizona, starting as soon as May, was scaled back to 542 detainees starting in October at the earliest, and DHS agreed to pay the city $300,000 a year for lost property taxes. The department may also offer more help with any police costs after negotiations with DHS under Mullen. With the new leadership, there's been a lot of communication. Surprise Mayor Kevin Sartor told a local radio show April 15th, a contrast to the, quote, very frustrating experience of how the city learned from news reports in January that DHS had purchased a 418,000-square-foot distribution center for $70 million. We do have a different leadership style, Mullen said in a CNBC interview April 16th, comparing himself to Noam. We want to make sure people understand that we're here working for the people, not against you. In Maryland, the new DHS administration has also offered a scaled back from 1,500 detainees to 542 in a Williamsport warehouse bought for $102 million in January. An April 15th court order keeps most work on the center paused as the state continues a lawsuit claiming impacts on the environmental, economic, and public health and safety interests of the state. In Arizona, dozens of Democratic state lawmakers sent a letter in April asking the city of Surprise to stop the facility from opening at all costs. But Mayor Sartor said he doesn't see a legal basis for a lawsuit. The mayor's office is nonpartisan, but Republicans predominate among registered voters in the city by almost 2-1 over Democrats. Communities across the country are facing the results of a massive detention expansion fueled in large part by the record $45 billion approved for increased immigration detention by Congress last summer. Other state and local action on the plan to repurpose warehouses for detention centers include a Kansas City, Missouri ban on non-municipal detention facilities passed in January. Developers halted the sale of a South Kansas City warehouse in February. Owners of an Indiana warehouse sent a letter saying they weren't in active negotiations for the site, which had been reported as a potential detention center and drew local opposition from the town of Maryville. Democratic lawmakers in Florida opposed plans for a warehouse detention center near Orlando in February, while some Republican lawmakers supported it. In Georgia, the city of Social Circle cut off water and sewer service for a $128.6 million warehouse proposed to hold 10,000 detainees, saying the town of 5,000 people did not have the capacity to serve it. The city's infrastructure cannot accommodate this level of demand, according to a February statement from the city, despite a certainly creative solution suggested by DHS to fill a water supply cistern at times of low demand. And that concludes this second story, Surprise ICE Detention Plan Scaled Back from 1,500 Beds to 542. Returning to elections 2026, Green Party governor candidate her own party called a sham survives two ballot challenges by Caitlin Sievers, April 20th, 2026. The Arizona Green Party candidate for governor, who used to sell MAGA merch and was a Republican Party official just days before she launched her campaign, has defeated two challenges to keep her off the July primary ballot. Last week, a Maricopa County Superior Court judge ruled that even though 40% of the voters' signatures that Risa Lombardo gathered were invalid, she still had enough signatures to remain on the ballot. Green Party candidates running for statewide office this year were required to collect at least 1,771 valid voter signatures. After 1,296 of the 3,250 signatures Lombardo gathered were disqualified, she was left with 1,954 valid signatures. Even though Lombardo will be on the July 21 primary ballot under the party's name, that doesn't mean the Arizona Green Party will support her. Lombardo was listed by Maricopa County as a Republican precinct committeeman until February 28, 2025, 5 days before she filed a statement of interest to run for governor as a member of the Green Party. 2 years before that, Lombardo was selling MAGA merch, including, quote, F. Joe Biden shirts and Carry One buttons. She also donated to and helped with the Arizona Senate campaign of Republican Josh Barnett, a QAnon follower and election denier, and was married to current Republican precinct committeeman Michael Lombardo. Risa Lombardo told the Arizona Mirror that the two had divorced, though there are no records of a divorce in Maricopa County Court. In a previous email to the Mirror, Lombardo denied accusations that she was a sham candidate meant to draw votes from Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs in order to benefit the Republican who faces her in November. Lombardo didn't answer questions about her switch from the Republican Party to the Green Party just before deciding to run, or about her support for and ties to far-right candidates. Democratic activist Craig Beckman and No Labels Party candidate for governor Terry Horahan filed separate challenges to Lombardo's candidacy. Lombardo was representative in the challenge by Republican election attorneys Tim Lasota and Corey Langhofer, whose past clients have included Donald Trump's presidential campaign and the Arizona Republican Party. As of the first quarter of 2026, Lombardo had received zero campaign donations, so it's unclear how she paid the attorneys. Lombardo did not respond to a request for comment about her victory in court or a question about who paid her attorney's fees. Judge Melissa Iyer Julian dismissed Horahan's challenge on April 13th. Julian confirmed in an April 16th ruling that 1,156 of the signatures that Beckman challenged had already been invalidated by the county recorders, but invalidated 140 more based on the evidence he provided to the court. Julian found that Beckman didn't provide enough evidence to invalidate the rest of the signatures he challenged, which he said were gathered by circulators who weren't legally qualified. In his challenge, Beckman claimed that one signature gatherer didn't live at the address he listed on his petitions, based on a conversation a private investigator had with a woman who lived at the address. But during a court hearing last week, the woman, the signature gatherer's wife, admitted that she had lied to the private investigator when she said the signature gatherer didn't live there because the investigator hadn't provided her with identification. Julian did invalidate 48 signatures gathered by Eduardo Sandoval after the woman who lived at the address he listed on his petitions said she barely knew him, that he'd never lived there, and that he might have visited her home once more than a decade ago. Beckman claimed that all of the signatures gathered by three circulators were invalid because they had been convicted of felonies and hadn't restored their rights, meaning they aren't qualified to register to vote in Arizona. Julian found that in two instances, Beckman only showed that the circulators had the same names as people convicted of felonies, but couldn't prove they were the same people. But the judge invalidated all of the signatures gathered by Nelmara Rickchan Marasigan after Beckman provided additional information to show that the circulator had been convicted of a felony, disqualifying him from being a circulator. And that concludes this story. Green Party governor candidate her own party called a sham survives two ballot challenges. And continuing with elections 2026, Alma and Consuelo Hernandez beat legal efforts to boot them off legislative ballot. Tucson state lawmakers will remain on ballot despite tens of thousands of dollars in campaign finance fines. By Jim Nitzel of the Tucson Sentinel, April 20th, 2026. Sisters and state lawmakers Alma and Consuelo Hernandez can remain on the ballot for their races for the Arizona legislature this year. Pima County Superior Court Judge Cynthia Kuhn ruled Thursday that neither candidate should be booted from the ballot over unpaid fines related to unfiled campaign finance reports. State Representative Alma Hernandez was facing a lawsuit seeking to disqualify her from running for the Arizona Senate from Legislative District 20 over fines stemming from her failure to file timely campaign finance reports with the state. Alma Hernandez, who has hit her term limit after serving four terms in the Arizona House of Representatives, is seeking to run for the open Arizona Senate seat being vacated by Democrat Sally Ann Gonzalez. As Hernandez seeks that seat, she faces fellow Democrat Roque Perez, who was one of two LD20 voters to file suit to pull her name from the primary ballot. The two cases were consolidated with attorney Jim Barton, who represents LD20 voter Luz Espinoza Burriel, arguing the case on April 13th. Both lawsuits noted that Alma Hernandez had racked up more than $20,000 in late fees and fines related to late or missing campaign finance reports. Barton is also representing Jessica Chalberg, who filed a lawsuit to knock State Representative Consuelo Hernandez off the ballot, alleging a similar claim regarding unpaid fines related to missing campaign finance reports. Consuelo Hernandez is seeking re-election to her House seats in Legislative District 21. She also serves on the Sunnyside Unified School District Governing Board. Kuhn ruled in the cases that the Arizona Attorney General's office never pursued action on the matter after being alerted to the late filings by the Arizona Secretary of State's office, so the Hernandez sisters would remain on the ballot. Because the Attorney General has never issued Ms. Hernandez an appealable notice of penalty in connection with any of her candidate committees, she is not, quote, liable for campaign finance penalties, Kuhn wrote in her ruling in the case against Alma Hernandez. Kuhn released a similar ruling in the case against Consuelo Hernandez. Barton filed notice that he intended to appeal the rulings to the Arizona Supreme Court. Consuelo Hernandez, who did not respond to emailed questions from the Sentinel, paid $24,840 in fines after filing her nominating petitions, according to the Secretary of State's office spokesperson, Callie Jones. Besides Consuelo Hernandez, three other Democratic candidates are in the LD21 Democratic primary for the two House seats: incumbent Republican Stephanie Stahl Hamilton and challengers Martiza Higuera, who is running on a slate with Consuelo Hernandez, and Miranda Lopez. District 21, which leans heavily Democratic, includes neighborhoods in central Tucson south of Broadway between 4th Avenue and Patano Road. It stretches south through Sahuarita and takes in southern Arizona communities such as Nogales and Bisbee. Alma Hernandez said after the ruling that Perez had chosen to misuse public resources and the time of our Superior Court for a political stunt. My opponent wanted to make me waste my money on political games, she said on Facebook following the ruling. Let's be real. This was never about a serious case. It was about trying to remove me from the primary ballot because he knows he can't win on the merits. It's a tired Trump-style playbook: distract, deflect, and try to rig the field. Elmer Hernandez did not reply to a Sentinel query regarding why she had failed to file or had filed late campaign finance reports. Perez said last week that he had decided to challenge Hernandez for the state Senate seat because she will often sidestep important votes or side with Republicans on issues important to Democrats. Over the course of almost now 8 years, four terms, she's broken with Democrats on everything from public education support, she has missed numerous votes that would have held vouchers accountable, to bills that would have protected trans individuals, Perez said. I think as we're moving to create a majority in the House and Senate, we can't risk having Democrats that are not aligned with the interests of our larger party. He said he filed the court case because he wanted to see transparency in terms of who was supporting Hernandez. We all deserve to know who our representation is beholden to, Perez said. Last year, Perez was appointed to the Tucson City Council after Richard Fimbres, a longtime Ward 5 council member, stepped down to focus on his health in May. Perez left the City Council in December when Democrat Selena Barajas was sworn into office. Perez and Hernandez both filed to run for the Senate seat being vacated by Gonzalez, who has reached her four-term limit and is now running for the House of Representatives in District 20. That Democratic House primary also includes incumbent Representative Betty Villegas and two challengers, Genoveva Diaz, who is running as part of a slate with Hernandez and Gonzalez, and rookie candidate Ben Kohler. District 20, which includes precincts on Tucson's downtown and west side, leans heavily Democratic, with 47% of voters registered with the Democratic Party, 16% registered as Republicans, and 37% not registered with either major party. We're going to pause for a minute to remind you that you're listening to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sunsounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. And now we return to our story. In related news, State Senator Brian Fernandez overcame a legal effort to remove him from the ballot. Maricopa County Superior Court Judge John L. Blanchard ruled Thursday that plaintiff Wendy Jonesy had failed to prove by clear and convincing evidence that the candidate submitted fewer than the 474 valid signatures required by law. Fernandez represents Legislative District 23, which includes precincts in Yuma, Pima, Pinal, and Maricopa counties. Ryan Slauson, who hopes to challenge Republican Gail Griffin in GOP-leaning Legislative District 19, was booted from the ballot after a lawsuit challenged his candidacy. Maricopa County Superior Court Judge Dwayne D. Fox ruled on April 14th that a review of Slauson's nominating petitions showed he came up short by one signature for the required 429 valid signatures. Justice of the Peace David Miller, who was appointed to the Precinct 6 seat in 2025, failed in his effort to knock his primary challenger, Morgan Mihalik, from the ballot. Pima County Superior Court Judge Brendan J. Griffin dismissed the case on technical grounds, saying Miller had failed to properly serve Pima County Elections Director Constant Hargrove with the lawsuit. Mihalik applied for the job last year, but was passed over by the Pima County Board of Supervisors in favor of Miller. Miller alleged in his lawsuit that Mihalik had stated at the top of her nominating petitions that the signers were residents of Legislative District 18, but the justice precinct stretches across multiple legislative districts, and not all of those who signed her petitions lived in LD 18. And that concludes this story. Alma and Consuelo Hernandez beat legal efforts to boot them off legislative ballot. Our next story, Arizona police agencies chose not to partner with ICE, this GOP bill would take that choice away. By Gloria Rebecca Gomez, April 21, 2026. Arizona Republicans are hoping to turn every police department in the state into a processing hub for U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. On Tuesday, the State House of Representatives gave preliminary approval to Senate Bill 1055, which would require law enforcement agencies in Arizona to notify ICE or U.S. Customs and Border Protection if they arrest a person they suspect is in the country without authorization, even if that person hasn't been convicted of a crime. The proposal is one of several being pushed this legislative session by the GOP majority in an effort to support the Trump administration's mass deportation campaign. Many police departments and sheriff's offices already communicate with federal immigration authorities about people in their custody, most notably through partnerships known as 287G agreements. The agreements help cut down on the investigative legwork for federal agents and make it easier to ramp up deportation statistics. In the Grand Canyon State, the Mesa Police Department, the Arizona Department of Corrections, and sheriff's offices in Yuma, Navajo, La Paz, Cochise, Pinal, and Yavapai counties are part of the program. Other agencies have declined to enter into such contracts. Pima County Sheriff Chris Nanos, a Democrat, refused to sign up for one even after the federal government began promising to reimburse agencies for their participation, saying it would undermine community trust in law enforcement. Maricopa County Sheriff Jerry Sheridan similarly opted not to enter his agency into an agreement, conscious of its fraught history with immigration enforcement. In 2011, the Department of Homeland Security terminated a 287G agreement with MCSO following a three-year-long civil rights investigation that found then-Sheriff Joe Arpaio used the agreement to target and racially profile Latinos. But the proposed legislation would effectively take away the ability of law enforcement agencies to choose for themselves whether to participate with federal immigration authorities. And Representative Quanta Cruz argued during Tuesday's debate of the bill, it threatens to imperil the constitutional rights of Arizonans. "Folks are innocent until proven guilty," she said. "My concern with this bill is that it would require reporting to ICE, the federal government, anyone you suspect might be here unlawfully." The Phoenix Democrat warned that it would lead to racial profiling if law enforcement officers rely on the language spoken or the ethnicity of people arrested to decide who to flag for federal agents. The U.S. Supreme Court has already ruled that ICE agents can racially profile people. Representative Pamela Carter, a Republican from Scottsdale, dismissed that concern, saying that officers would only notify federal agents once they've determined the person who was arrested is unable to prove their citizenship status through legal documents like a driver's license. But the bill language doesn't detail any process law enforcement officers need to follow before reporting a person they believe is eligible for deportation to federal authorities. The bill has yet to undergo a final vote in the House, but is likely to win approval along party lines, as happened in the Senate in February when the legislation only won GOP support. If it does pass the House, SB 1055 is almost certainly destined to be vetoed by Governor Katie Hobbs. The Democrat has consistently rejected legislation that doesn't earn bipartisan backing and has long criticized approaches that stifle local control. And that concludes this story. Arizona police agencies chose not to partner with ICE. This GOP bill would take that choice away. And our next story is in the same vein. Pima County attorney rejects GOP challenge to block ICE from, quote, staging on county property. State legislators asked the AG's office to investigate ordinance passed by the Pima County Board of Supervisors as part of widespread backlash against ICE. By Paul Ingram of the Tucson Sentinel, April 22, 2026. A resolution passed by the Board of Supervisors in February barring the use of county property by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers does not violate state and federal law, the Pima County Attorney's Office maintains. Earlier this month, Republican state legislators, led by Senate President Warren Peterson, filed a request for an investigation and asked Attorney General Chris Mays to review the resolution. In his request filed on April 6th, Peterson claimed its provisions work to construct a countywide discriminatory barrier to federal civil immigration enforcement. Samuel Brown, Pima's chief civil deputy county attorney, rejected Peterson's argument last week. Rather, the resolution, quote, describes locally directed purposes which in no way seek to regulate the federal government. Brown told the state solicitor general's office, writing on behalf of Pima County attorney Laura Conover. Brown said the document appropriately prohibits employees from granting consent for civil immigration enforcement activities in county facilities, either without a valid arrest warrant or except where such assistance is required by law. Mays didn't provide specifics about the review of the county's ordinance when questioned by Tucson Sentinel editor Dylan Smith on Friday's Buckmaster radio show, but said that she tries to make decisions that come down on the side of local control. In mid-February, the Board of Supervisors passed Resolution 2026-10, which limits ICE agents from conducting civil immigration enforcement on county property without a judicial warrant, including blocking agents from using parking lots and other property for staging operations. Pima County's largely symbolic measure allows ICE agents to use the local government's property if they have a warrant issued by a judge. ICE has routinely used administrative warrants signed by Homeland Security staffers rather than judges to make arrests. Earlier this year, the agency sought to expand the use of administrative warrants, claiming they can use them to enter people's homes. The supervisors also passed a resolution criticizing the widespread use of masks by federal agents and called on ICE agents to identify themselves as federal immigration officers to make clear that they are not officers, agents, or employees of Pima County. The resolutions passed 4-1 with Steve Christie, the board's sole Republican, voting no on both. The county's resolutions are part of a widespread backlash against ICE following the Trump administration's immigration crackdown and the killing of two people in Minneapolis by federal agents in January and February. Since then, Americans have soured on the agency as dozens of viral videos show agents abusing the constitutional rights of U.S. citizens and immigrants alike, often violently. In Tucson, ICE officers have used force, including, quote, less lethal weapons against observers and protesters, including a recent incident in April in a Walgreens parking lot in South Tucson. Local leaders across the country have responded by attempting to limit how local police can operate with ICE and block the agency from using city or county property, the Vera Institute reported. This includes the Tucson City Council, who passed their own resolution limiting ICE from staging or carrying out civil immigration enforcement on city-owned property. As part of the new regulation, the city will install signs with the prohibition, telling federal law enforcement officers they cannot use property for civil law enforcement or civil immigration enforcement. The regulation would also create protocols on how the city would respond to requests from law enforcement agencies who want to use city property or resources. On April 6th, Peterson, joined by fellow Republican lawmakers T.J. Shope and John Kavanaugh, asked the Attorney General to investigate whether the county's resolution violates state law, which states that no official or agency may limit or restrict the enforcement of federal immigration laws. Peterson argued the resolution would include local law enforcement, who could block ICE agents from local correctional facilities, police departments, and prevent ICE access to courthouses. Under the resolution, then, any member of the public can walk into a county building and ask for directions or use a parking lot, while a federal immigration officer cannot, Peterson claimed. Accordingly, the resolution limits and restricts ICE's ability to comply with the congressional mandate to inspect, investigate, arrest, detain, and remove people suspected of being in the country without authorization. Peterson added the requirement ICE officials seek judicial warrants rather than administrative memos issued by the agency's own employees demands a document Congress never required officials to obtain. Homeland Security officials have defended the use of administrative warrants, arguing these documents were created for people who have had full due process and a final order of removal from immigration judges, employees of the Justice Department, and courts regularly allow these documents because the immigrants aren't entitled to the same Fourth Amendment protections as U.S. citizens, DHS officials said. DHS officials added that because Congress hasn't created a mechanism to obtain a judicial warrant, this meant that under previous presidential administrations, ICE would sit outside the homes of fugitive aliens waiting for them to come outside before arresting them. DHS also blamed, quote, deep state actors in the federal government who have for decades told ICE officers that they may not enter a fugitive alien's home, even with a final order of removal and administrative warrant. Peterson is running for Attorney General this year and would face Mays on the ballot in November if he wins the Republican primary against perennial candidate Rodney Glassman. The county must abide by Arizona law, Peterson wrote, adding that state law prohibits counties from restricting federal immigration enforcement, and the state constitution recognizes the supremacy of federal law. We respectfully request that the Attorney General investigate, conclude that the resolution does violate state law, and initiate proceedings. Under Senate Bill 1487, Arizona legislators can demand an investigation over whether local resolutions violate state law. State Representative Quang Nguyen, also a Republican, made a similar demand for an investigation against the city of Phoenix for its resolution limiting the use of city-owned property for immigration enforcement. The city of Phoenix argued federal law does not entitle federal agents to use municipal property as a staging area, processing location, or operations base for civil law enforcement purposes. Similarly, no federal law requires cities to make their properties available to federal agents to enforce federal immigration laws, wrote Julie Craig, a City of Phoenix attorney. Even if the Phoenix limitations may have some indirect or ancillary impact on federal immigration enforcement, such impact does not limit or restrict immigration enforcement to less than the full extent permitted by federal law. In the specific context of immigration enforcement, courts have consistently drawn a line between active obstruction of federal enforcement, impermissible, and the decision not to affirmatively provide resources for federal purposes, permissible, Craig added. Brown told the AG's office the resolution does not violate state or federal law because the resolution expressly includes language noting it restricts the execution of court orders or lawful judicial warrants, limit assistance with investigations, or limit the enforcement of federal immigration laws to less than the full extent permitted by federal law. He noted that Peterson nor the other Republicans could point to any federal law requiring a county to grant federal agents unfettered access to county property upon a showing of an administrative warrant. The question here is whether federal law grants to immigration officers unfettered access to county property upon a showing of an administrative order. It does not, he said. Under Arizona law, Pima County officials may restrict or limit immigration officials to the extent that federal law itself restricts said officials. The AG's office has 30 days to review the matter and issue a report whether a local action violates state law. And that concludes this story. Pima County attorney rejects GOP challenge to block ICE from staging on county property. And finally, judge blocks Arizona water rule that halted new housing developments across the valley, by Caitlin Sievers, April 21, 2026. A judge handed a huge win to developers Tuesday when he blocked an Arizona water rule that put a stop to new housing developments in some areas of the valley. The ruling prohibits the Arizona Department of Water Resources from using its, quote, unmet demand rule for the Phoenix Active Management Area. The Home Builders Association of Central Arizona, represented by attorneys from the Conservative Goldwater Institute, filed a lawsuit in January 2025 to challenge what they said were illegal assured water supply restrictions put in place by ADWR. In a Tuesday ruling, Maricopa County Superior Court Judge Scott Blaney found that ADWR didn't have the legal authority to implement the new unmet demand rule in the Phoenix Active Management Area because it didn't comply with the Arizona Administrative Procedures Act rulemaking process. Blaney wrote that the unmet demand rule was illegal and blocked ADWR from using it to determine if developers had enough groundwater for the 100-year supply requirement. We're delighted that the court has struck down the bureaucracy's newfangled restriction on home construction, a rule that reduced the availability of homes and raised housing costs in one of the nation's fastest-growing housing markets, said Timothy Sandifer, the Goldwater Institute's vice president for legal affairs. All residential home builders within Arizona's designated groundwater active management areas must obtain a certificate of 100-year assured water supply or a commitment from a water provider that already has a certificate of assured water supply to provide water to their subdivision before they can build. Developers must meet several criteria to obtain a certificate, such as ensuring the water will be of good quality and that it will be legally, physically, and continuously available. In June 2023, Governor Katie Hobbs, a Democrat, released an updated hydrological model for the Phoenix AMA, which covers most of the metro area, showing a projected 4% shortfall in its 100-year water supply. The announcement halted some plans for new housing in Queen Creek, Goodyear, and Buckeye that relied only on groundwater, even as the region faced a severe housing shortage. These areas are not served by any water provider, so developers' only option is to apply for their own assured water supply certificate. The Department of Water Resources released an updated version of the model in November 2024, in which it doubled down on its decision not to issue more assured water supply certificates. The home builders claimed that under the unmet demand rule, if modeling shows that one well within the Phoenix AMA is predicted to go dry within the next 100 years, it is treated as though no groundwater will be physically available anywhere in the AMA, even if that well could be relocated to an area with a full water supply. The rule would also consider all water in the AMA unavailable if any well within it couldn't access quality water at 1,000 feet deep. Previously, developers could obtain a certificate of assured water supply by providing ADWR with a hydrological study showing the availability of water at one well point instead of across the entire active management area. ADWR is utilizing criteria when reviewing applications that did not previously exist, while claiming that it is still applying the existing rules, Blaney wrote in his preliminary ruling on Tuesday. The judge wrote that he agreed with the Goldwater Institute's argument that the state cannot be allowed to rationalize a new rule by camouflaging it as just a new implementation of an old rule. The Goldwater Institute claimed that this would give government agencies the option of sidestepping the legal rulemaking process by claiming they had reinterpreted existing rules. The Home Builders Association, the Goldwater Institute, and their supporters said that the development's refusal to issue assured water supply certificates was causing, quote, enormous harm to developers and landowners. The builders said that ADWR had essentially blocked residential developers from starting new projects and continuing ongoing projects for which they had incurred significant expense in reliance on their legal entitlement to certificates of assured water supply. The Arizona Department of Water Resources told the Arizona Mirror in a written statement that although a final judgment in the case is still coming, the department plans to appeal Blaney's decision once it's made. This case is just the latest example of the dangers of the unelected, unaccountable administrative state, Sandifer said in his statement. Here, bureaucrats decided to drastically rewrite Arizona rules governing home construction in ways that harm not just Phoenix, but all Arizonans. We're glad the courts have made clear that no, they must obey the law, not rewrite it. And that concludes this story. Judge blocks Arizona water rule that halted new housing developments across the valley. And that's all the time we're going to have for this week's edition of the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. Remember, if you missed any part of this program or want to hear a story again, you can go to our website, sunsounds.org, and click On Demand Podcasts. Thanks so much for joining us this week. Stay tuned for more great programming from Sun Sounds of Arizona, and we'll look forward to having you join us next week. Bye-bye.